Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the directorial voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. That's a new one again.
Well, kind of the point. It's always new.
Every time. You've got so many words.
Always the same with this. So many words. Always the same.
Yeah, I didn't know what you were going to... I know what we're about to talk about. I did wonder what word you would use. And dictatorial. Is that close?
Directorial.
Dictatorial is a little bit different, isn't it?
You've been brushing up on your camera work.
I have. Yes, I have. I'm due to be the star of a show this week, actually.
Go on.
It's called the Cycling GK and cameo appearance. I'm hoping that I'm edited into it, actually, because, of course, I don't know what the final cut's going to look like. But long story short, I played some golf with Ben last week, with Ben Foster, of course, his very popular Cycling GK YouTube sensation that he is now. And... yeah, I was doing a lot of filming as we went round the golf course. Every now and then he'd say, Rich, do me a favor, can you film this? And every time I did, he'd always produce a great shot or do something of note, just very much the way that Ben is, I guess. So, yeah, and there were a few occasions, I think he filmed one or two of my swings. I've got a feeling that my stuff might get cut out, though. I'm saying this, and I'm quite excited to see the episode, but there is every chance I actually won't appear in it at all.
Did you do anything that would be noteworthy?
Not really, no, but still. There was a couple of points when he's mentioned. It was me and Ben against Rob Elliott and Rob's friend, and we did win 4-3. For those that don't know golf terms, that means we were 4 up with 3 holes to play. So it was quite comfortable, really, very comfortable. And if you're interested about my performance, then again, I can go into detail. I'm pretty sure you don't want me to, so I won't, but by all means, just DM me and I'll tell you about how good I was. But yeah, no, in terms of anything of note, no, nothing really.
Thanks for the invite. So cheers. That's nice. Right.
Yeah, I've only just told you about it now, actually.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Never get invited to any of these things. But just to talk about the Cycling GK, because I find it funny, actually, that Ben Foster does this, because he is very blasé, isn't he? Football's not secondary to him, but he's someone who says, don't take it too seriously. You know, enjoy yourself and have a laugh. And I've always thought that social media to him would be something that he'd have no interest in whatsoever. But he has embraced this, hasn't he? How much does he have the camera with him at all times?
During the round, it would be every now and then. So he'd suddenly be like, okay, I'm just going to do a quick bit. And he'd quickly say a few things to camera, might get me to film him doing a putt, doing a drive, doing a shot of note. And then that would be that. So, but he's quite good in that, in fairness to him, it was always one take. You know, if he was going to do something, he'd literally shout something at the camera. And then that would be that. But you're right, it's... no, credit to him. I mean, again, I don't know all that much about YouTube. I know that he's got the best part of 600,000 subscribers, I think he's got now, which is phenomenal. And the amount of different companies he's associated with because of the cycling aspect as well. And it's his passion. You know, this isn't goalkeeping related, but when you talk about whatever it is you do, and I know a lot of you guys listening in, goalkeeping's your passion. But if you get to do whatever it is on a day-to-day basis that you really, really love, then you're enjoying yourself. And of course, Ben, he absolutely adores cycling. And the fact that he can mix goalkeeping and cycling in the way that he does, credit to him. And it's interesting just watching how he operates, you know, obviously even on a golf course. And I mentioned that we won, and I said I played well. I didn't actually, I was pretty poor, but Ben was excellent. And he is just that type of person that when he tunes in, when he gets his mind right, he just finds a way to win. He always has done.
Okay, well, there's plenty coming up. Of course, he made an appearance for Watford, his first in a while on the final day of the season. We're going to be talking all about that in the Championship, League One and League Two. Some Premier League stuff as well, some correspondence, and my word, the results of the clean sheet club.
Mm.
Wow.
Cannot wait. I don't even know the result.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GK Union, hello@goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 075-03-673-020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
We are going to start with Leicester's defeat to Newcastle at home. 4-2, they lost to the Magpies, but some very good goalkeeping from Kasper Schmeichel and Martin Dubravka. And we are going to start with Kasper, who produced arguably the save of the season, if not right up there as a contender for save of the season, from Alan Saint-Maximin. Can we talk about this? Because everybody watching this live on Sky Sports would have just had jaws on the floor. Incredible save.
Yeah, how anybody could criticise Saint-Maximin at all for this, which I did hear one or two saying, oh, should score there. To be honest, this beats every goalkeeper. He's done everything right. Opened up his body, slotted it in the corner. What more can you do? For me, What makes this save so special is the technique, a technique that Schmeichel adopts that nobody else in the Premier League really adopts, to spread in this way. And the thing that I find so impressive is the width that he's able to get with the spread. By spreading in this way, he is maximising every inch and making himself as big as he possibly can, given that the probability is the ball will stay on the floor, it will be slotted in the corner, exactly as has happened here. And if you look at it at the point of contact, his execution of the technique is perfect. You know, he's already in midair, but by the point of contact, he's actually near enough on the ground, legs spread, split position, and makes it incredibly difficult to score. And the fact that it hits his toe and goes around the post, just a phenomenal save.
It's the fact that he is in the air before it gets to Saint-Maximin.
It's everything. It's the speed, it's the flexibility needed, it's the power. So you look at where he is when the ball's played across, he's having to make several yards to get close enough to make a spread worthwhile. If he's a yard further away, the spread makes absolutely no difference. But the fact that he is as close as he is, gets as close as he can, that's what makes the spread worthwhile. And he executes it absolutely perfectly. I don't know if Saint-Maximin can actually score here, because I feel like he has slotted it in the corner. So unless he's going to go right in the corner, maybe he can squeeze it past Schmeichel, or of course if he lifts it. But most players in this position are going to slide it into the corner. That's a safe finish. That beats 99% of goalkeepers, but it is just a phenomenal spread, a great bit of goalkeeping.
Yeah, just one of those where you go, what have I just seen? Incredible save from Kasper. They did lose the game 4-2, as I said. Two of the goals came up for question. The second one from Joel Dummett, the header, and then the third or the fourth one, I think it's the third one, wasn't it, where the pass back was loose and Callum Wilson rounded him and then slotted it into an empty net.
Yeah, interesting. And I wrote on my notes, I wrote it was three decisions in this game. One being what we've discussed, which was the decision to come out spread in the way that he did, and obviously made the great save. The next two decisions, he chose for the corner to turn in, set on the line and look to react and make the save on the line. And of course, from the pass back, he chose not to come out and to drop and make it a one-on-one situation. Look, in the end, they both ended up as goals. Doesn't necessarily mean they were wrong decisions, because as we've spoke of before, sometimes you can do the right thing and get the wrong result. On the corner, I've watched it a few times, and it's what I would say is he makes his decision very early. You know, when the ball's whipped in, it starts off probably towards the penalty spot, and of course a curl then brings it all the way in to 5 yards in the end. So yeah, of course, in a perfect world, he doesn't have anyone on him. If he had decided to come for the ball, I think he could get there. But of course, he makes a decision very early, and in the end, it's a good header, and he doesn't have any chance on the header itself. The pass back, I actually think he makes the right decision. You know, I always remember, I always touch on moments in my own career. I had a very similar one where I made the opposite decision and it ended up being a red card. Because if you don't get there, more often than not, you bring down the man and you get a red card, of course. So I think he's made the right decision. So I don't think he's going to get there from where his position was. It was a poor back pass. So I think he's made the correct decision here. But again, it was a good finish.
And Martin Dubravka made some good saves throughout. There was one crucial one in injury time. Leicester had pulled it back 2-4-2. There was about 5 minutes to go. If this goes in, it is very much squeaky bum time, but a really good save from Ayoze Perez.
Excellent save. Yeah, no chance on the goals. I know there was one that was questioned, I believe, up to his left, but for me, absolutely no chance. He had to move across the goal. And although it has gone in what would be described as his near post, for me, absolutely no chance. But no, it was very good save, final minute. Just the speed at which he came out and was very brave in getting to the ball itself and making himself big enough and making the save. Because as you say, I think if he doesn't make this save, then with a few minutes to go, you know, it would have been an absolute, would have been carnage. And no doubt there would have been another chance of note. So a key save.
Moving on to Liverpool's victory over Southampton at Anfield. Some good Alisson saves, some arguably not so good Alisson distribution. But we had a WhatsApp in and a tweet in regarding this, actually. The WhatsApp from Stephen Waite was that Fraser Forster was brilliant, but how good was Alisson Becker reading this pass? Great body shape to be on the front foot to make the block and then being switched on and composed to make the second save. Got to be worth a shout.
Yeah, loved it. No, and it's a really good shout. Appreciate the message as always. Brilliant. You know, we went through it this morning and we paused it at the point that the pass is made. And actually, at that point, if the player decides to shoot, they probably score because Alisson's a good 7 or 8 yards off his line. He is reading this way before it's happened. And in the end, it was because of that, that when the ball does come across, he's able to get within a yard and make it near impossible to score and then is brave with his spread and makes a save. Whereas ordinarily, textbook goalkeeping would be that you're 2-3 yards off your line and you would never have the chance to get to within a yard or two of the player. So realistically, it would then turn into a shot from, what, 12 yards, you 2 or 3 yards off your line. They're probably going to score. So I just thought this was brilliant reading of the game.
It is brilliant reading of the game because he makes the save from Shea Adams. It was that chance, wasn't it? Is it also a gamble? Because if you're coming up against a world-class player in that position who does have the nous to notice that Alisson has obviously gone way off his near post, that potentially goes in, like you say. So it's very good goalkeeping, but also a calculated gamble. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, if they score from this situation, which he could have, there's players out there that would have seen that and they would have smashed it in that near post and they would have scored. Then you could imagine it would have been all the Alisson headlines again and him getting all sorts of blame for it. But I think this is where what I quite like about this, and again, people have different opinions and some of you listening in might not agree with me on this, I think he's playing the probability here in that the chances are, what, 99 times out of 100, this ball's being squared across. Does that then make it right to guess and to gamble? Again, some people will say no. For me, I think that if you're playing the percentages, I think here, the move that he's made and the play he's made, he's going to make more saves than goals conceded. So for me, unless it becomes something where players see this and start to capitalize on it and start to beat him at his near post or find a way to catch him out, until that moment happens, it has to go down as very good goalkeeping.
Moving over to Villa Park, Aston Villa 1, Manchester United 3. The second goal scored by Mason Greenwood has caused a bit of a stir. Not so much really on TV. The pundits and the co-commentators weren't really saying too much about Emi Martinez. But what did you make of this one?
I mean, look, it's one of them. I think that Greenwood's come in and struck it with his left foot. I think there's a couple of parts to this. I think one, it's a bobbly strike. I don't think it's the easiest one to get a firm hand to. In some ways, if it's zipped along the ground, then it's much easier to predict. So I think that's played a part. Yeah, there would be a slight expectation that it's going to go across you. But what I would say is that Martinez has taken up a very true position. So he hasn't started to gamble. He hasn't undercovered, overcovered. He's actually in a very good position. I think it's just very simply that he doesn't quite execute the save. And the fact that it's gone in that side, of course, one or two people might ask questions and it doesn't look like it's flown past him. So naturally, one or two people will ask questions of that as well. And no doubt he'll be a bit disappointed himself. But I think, look, we could go into this and go into huge detail. For me, this is very simple. He's set well. He's in a good position. He's got a good dive away to his left. He should save it, given that he's done everything right. He just hasn't quite timed it with the bobble and with the way in which he's moved his hand towards it. He just hasn't quite timed it to tip it around the post. It's ended up almost going under or over or through. It's hard to tell, but it's ended up a bit of a scrappy one and no doubt one he'll be disappointed with.
There was a penalty not given against Dean Henderson towards the end of this game too. Ollie Watkins, as a result, was dismissed. Now, they focused on this on Match of the Day too. Jermaine Gina saying it categorically was not a pen. And he made a good point, which I agree with, about the fact that we are obsessed now with any kind of contact in the penalty area having to be a penalty. He said it wasn't a penalty. He said it was a good thing that Ollie Watkins was sent off because it might teach players in due course not to do the same thing. Was it or was it not a penalty?
No, it wasn't a pen. I know you disagree with this, which I find mental. But for me, no, I wouldn't say it's a particularly great decision or great goalkeeping in this moment, but credit to him in that at the last second he realizes that, okay, I'm not going to get the ball, I'm corner of my box, there's no real need for me to get involved, so he pulls his foot away and he doesn't touch him. So of course it can't be a penalty. Now, I can't speak for Ollie Watkins because I'm not a striker and I haven't been in that position, and I hear the perspective of you almost start to go down expecting the contact. But now, for me, from a goalkeeper's point of view, you've gone, I mean, how many times we've all had it where you've gone, maybe you've slid out or you've gone for that tackle and you can feel that they're falling into you and they're looking for that penalty. And it's one of the most frustrating things when you know that they can avoid you if they want to avoid you. Well, here, they have avoided, he has avoided him, and yet he's still gone down. So, no, for me, absolutely not a penalty. You disagree?
I do. Yeah, I do disagree. I just, and going on what the pros have said as well. You say you weren't a striker. I wasn't a professional footballer. Now, when you listen to the likes of Jermaine Genus and Alan Shearer speaking, you know, two guys who have played at the very highest level saying that's not a penalty, then I should probably look at that and go, oh, okay, I'm wrong. Perhaps I'm going down the wrong road with this. And that's absolutely fine. We had this discussion, didn't we, on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think, about when goalkeepers come out, make the action to potentially impede the player, and at the last, not even at the last second, at the last millisecond, take their arms or take their legs away. Now, Dean Henderson has come out here, Ollie Watkins in full flow, has got the touch. Dean Henderson has brought his leg up. He's made very minimal contact, not enough to send someone over. Although I would argue, again, moving at that pace, potentially enough to send you over. Ollie Watkins is expecting the contact, absolutely. As a result, he goes down because he thinks Dean Henderson's going to follow through with what he's done. Now, Dean Henderson, I would say, has gone three quarters of the movement. In my opinion, I think that's enough. When you're running at that speed, you get a touch and someone puts their leg in front of you at your thigh, is pretty much what it was. That, for me, that's a penalty. I think to then take it away, that would be obstruction again in my book. In my opinion, I just think that it's so difficult for an attacker to not go down in that situation. I don't think it's a booking. I don't think he should have been sent off. Don't give the penalty, but don't send him off.
The thing is, now you've got to do one or the other, right? You can't
that's
do
where
one.
That's where it's, again, a grey area, right? I don't think Ollie Watkins, he seems like a very honest individual, a very honest player. I don't think that he's purposely gone
can't
to
play
dive
a part.
There.
You can't look at it because that's part of what's wrong with football in the first place is that, yeah, referees arguably are making snap judgments on certain players and what types of player they are. Yeah, he looks like a lovely boy. Don't get me wrong. He looks like a lovely, lovely man. I'm sure he is. But still, in this situation, he has dived. He has categorically dived in the penalty area. The goalkeeper's made no touch. If that happens in outfield, the amount of times that a player will skip past a defender and then fall over, they'll get lots of stick. So, I don't know. I look at it, surely you would wait for the contact, get the contact. Yeah, it might hurt a little bit, but then you have bought or earned your team a penalty because you have been fouled. I can never understand it, but it is what it is. By the way, I wish we had cameras on us now because then the listeners could see that you are mimicking a running action with two fingers, showing me exactly how someone runs, which has made it so much clearer now. And then you had the two fingers fall over and hit the ground.
Kind of ruined my point by doing that, didn't
I? Yeah, embarrassing, really.
You talk about outfielders, though, and if that happened, it does happen all the time. It's very difficult to watch football these days because the whistle is being blown every 5 seconds for crying out loud. So you do see that outfield all the time, that players are going down with very minimal contact, sometimes no contact at all. Sometimes the ref is giving it because he hasn't given a decision 2 minutes ago, so he gives it there. As soon as I watched it, I thought, wow, it's a penalty. 100% that is a penalty. And when I saw the replay, I thought, yep, that's a penalty. I couldn't believe that he got sent off for it. I know double yellow, but still, couldn't believe it.
Okay, we'll agree to disagree.
Okay, be interesting to see what you think, actually. Let us know on this and some of the pros that listen to. Let us know what you think. As goalkeepers, would you be disappointed if that was given against you? Pretty sure I know the answer, but please, it's a good topic of discussion. Just a few more to finish on here. Leeds 3, Tottenham 1. Hugo Lloris keeping the score down again, however.
Yeah, indeed. One save in particular I wanted to touch on, up to his left. I thought very, very good. Sharp save. Reactions, always seem to say that word when it comes to Hugo Lloris, but the speed at which he moved up to his left to get fingertips, very good save.
Sheffield United 0, Crystal Palace.
I'm going to stop you there, Matthew. You didn't mention Melier made a fantastic save.
Good point. Very good point.
How dare you? How dare you? What a save it was as well. Deflection back towards his near. Brilliant save. So as much as we've got to give Lloris some credit, for me, the save from Melier, because he's moving to his right, took a huge deflection, heading back to his left, going at such pace. Brilliant, brilliant save.
Good to know you've been keeping up, Richard.
Keep an eye.
Just testing you. Sheffield United 0, Crystal Palace 2. Aaron Ramsdale with some very good saves again in this one. Smiling now. Just seems like there's no pressure on him. He's just enjoying his football.
Yeah, he is. And I think that the save itself, and I think we've all been there as goalkeepers, where you make that save and you almost surprise yourself. And you could see he's gone to someone and he's like, that was good, wasn't it? you know, it was along those lines. And he was happy. And look, of course, now it's not been a good season for Sheffield United. The pressure is off. Their fate has been sealed. They know what's going on. And as we so often see, the feeling around the place can change where, you know, it turns into a positive in some ways. And certainly for Aaron Ramsdale, just, we've touched him many times, but this season, from what was a tough start, not necessarily because of him, but because of the situation that surrounded him and him being the subject of so many articles, credit to him, because he stuck in there. What we talk about goalkeepers all the time when we say about resilience and just keep moving forward. And he really has turned it around. And most games now, he is their standout performer. And the save that he made, as we say, it was a very, very good save. Decision to retreat to his line was spot on. The reactions to get to his left. And one of the words I wrote down was dynamic. I just thought the movement to his left, such a dynamic movement and very good technique in order to keep the ball out of the net.
Wolves 2, Brighton 1. Rui Patricio with a save from a Lewis Dunk header. It was 1-0. At the time to Brighton. Brilliant save, this kind of a combo of palm and bar.
It was. This was one that I think, as a goalkeeper, great save, first and foremost, because he's taken 2-3 steps, exploded up to his left, and as you say, fingertips plus bar, puts it around the post. And I think that for the goalkeepers that do that drill where you might go top corner to top corner, right, left, and as you get up, you get 2 or 3 steps to then explode up into the other corner. And again, you get up 2 or 3 steps, explode into the other corner. What it allows you, the momentum, the speed, allows you that power to really get more height than you would ever get from a standing jump, for instance. So that was the bit I loved about this, is there's a point when he is horizontal, so high in the air, so much power, but a lot of it would have been because of the fact that he got his footwork absolutely spot on.
And finally, Arsenal 3, West Brom 1. Willian got it up, over and down for his free kick, Richard. Sam Johnstone was beaten on his side. What did you make of this one?
Do you know what? This is a tricky one, because I'm quite steadfast in my belief in that if it goes in your side, ordinarily you should save it. If it goes over the wall and it goes in the corner, then ordinarily you shouldn't. You know, it's normally very good. This one, there's a few parts to this. Firstly, the trajectory on the ball does make it very difficult for Sam Johnstone, because although it's gone his side, it has gone up, down and over. I've said it the wrong way around again, haven't I? It's gone up, over and down. So it is actually dipping into the top corner, which of course will make it that little bit tougher. And it was a bizarre free kick in that the wall just seemed to disintegrate in front of him as well. So it became a very easy strike to put it in that corner. I get the impression that Sam Johnstone just edged ever so slightly to his left. Minimal. I wonder if that played a little bit of a part in him not being able to get all that close to it. The other thing I'd say here, and this, again, it's a minor detail, and I don't necessarily know the answer to this, but the situation of this free kick changed the moment that Pepe ran over the ball. Because Pepe runs over the ball, you now don't have a left footer and a right footer. You only now have a right footer, which means you know the curl on the ball. You know it's either going to curl up, down over the wall and into that corner, or it's going to be whipped back across you into the corner. So I wonder whether that was why Sam Johnstone moved to his left, gauging the fact that the curl was always going to start towards him but then move away. But ultimately, that tiny, tiny movement might have been the reason why he wasn't able to get to this ball. So I'm torn on this one. There's part of me that says it was his side. If he'd have held his position really firm and exploded in the way that we know Sam Johnstone can, then we know he makes this save. But at the same time, there's so much else going on at the same time. This isn't one where I'm watching and I'm throwing my cup of tea on the floor and I'm shouting at a goalkeeper, because I think it is an excellent free kick and there is quite a lot of other things going on, let's say. That is the Premier League done. But of course, this weekend wasn't really about the Premier League, was it? Because there was so much more going on. It is now time for this.
Yes, it is the Championship rundown, where Derby are staying up and Sheffield Wednesday are going down. Richard, 3-3 the result, and at one point 2-1 to Derby. Now, this is why we did and do the podcast. Kieran Westwood for the second goal. I need you to tell me why he was in the position that he was in. It was Patrick Roberts, wasn't it, that scored. And the commentary and everything around the goal was, what a strike, what a goal by Patrick Roberts. But I looked at that and thought, was it really as good as everybody's saying it is?
So the strike itself went quite central. And it's interesting because you watch it from a certain camera angle and it almost looks like it's going top corner, and it does look like a phenomenal strike. But of course, then you see it from behind, and if you pause it the moment he strikes the ball, Kieran Westwood is a long way out of position. You know, he's a good 7 yards off his line, away over to his left, and in the end the finish isn't that difficult, you could argue. Now, why is he where he is? For me, it's a case of him having to retreat very quickly, because this is a long ball. Ordinarily you'd maybe take up your position on the edge of the box, which he did in this situation, and because it all happens so quickly, long ball, ball knocked down, two touches, strike, it happens within seconds. So the speed at which you then need to get back to 2-3 yards if you want to have your optimum position, it's very, very quick, and he just hasn't got the chance to get back there. Now, could he have got a slightly better position than he did? Arguably so. I think that if he looks at it again, he might feel that maybe he could have got slightly more to his right and maybe dropped an extra yard. But in terms of a reason as to why he was so out of position, it was that. It was just the speed at which the play escalated. And for me, it's just a reminder of how you have to be absolutely switched on at all times. You know, if you're a goalkeeper, even if they got a goal kick, it can happen within seconds. And that's a great example of it there. And if you're not switched on, if you're only ambling back, then it really can catch you out. That's not to say that Kieran Westwood was ambling back, because I think he did actually move quite quickly, but it really just was that quick that he never got anywhere near where he needed to be.
Funny old game to watch, wasn't it? That game. Really funny game to watch.
I mean, I had Sky Sports News on for most of it because I was watching it all unfold. But then, of course, because that game finished so much later than the others, I ended up switching over towards the end. So I did catch quite a lot of the action, of course, seeing all the goals. And yeah, bizarre game. You know, how Derby have ended up staying in the league with everything that went on, the amount of times it all changed, how Wickham have finished third from bottom. Like, amazing for them in terms of what they've done, considering they lost the first 7 games of the season. I mean, look, there's always a lot of drama on the final day. And for me, as much as the top two has been sorted, the playoffs have been sorted, it was always going to be about this. And it really did live up to the billing.
Shambles, by the way, that it did last so much longer. It finished so much longer after the other games had finished. I know there was an injury to Martin Waghorn in the first half, which meant naturally it was extended because of the stoppage time. But it kicked off. Afterwards, they were saying, even on Sky Sports News, weren't they, on the Soccer Saturday, this hasn't kicked off yet, and the other games have already kicked off. So if that Rotherham game had ended 1-0 and Cardiff hadn't equalised, crikey, you could imagine what that last 10 minutes would have been like.
Oh, both teams knowing a draw. Yeah, could you imagine? A draw would have sent them both down, yet either team scores, they're staying up.
Yeah.
Oh, it would have been carnage.
Absolute carnage.
But it was straight, even the second half, they did make a point of this on Sky Sports News, they were ambling out. It was so slow for them to get out onto the pitch. And exactly that, you're thinking, this can't be right. And I know they had the situation in League Two, obviously a little bit different with Leyton Orient and Salford kicking off late, and in the end it didn't matter at all. But still, it's I guess it is what it is in that case. But certainly with the Derby one, was a little bit suspicious. And obviously it still was the last few minutes, you know, tense few minutes. And credit to Derby, I mean, credit to Keller Roos. I mean, we could go through the goals and nitpick on the various goals and what could have happened. But I think credit to Keller Roos, where, of course, he had such a tough moment in the playoffs a year or two back that didn't go his way. And he got a lot of criticism for that. This was another big, big game. And look, I've been there as a goalkeeper when you're playing in a game like this. And when it goes your way, especially a season that he's had where he's been back and forth with Marshall, they've given him the nod for this particular game. And for him to get the result that was needed and stay up, I'm sure he'll enjoy this one.
We haven't mentioned the fact, actually, that he regained the number one jersey, didn't he, from David Marshall. What does that mean now for David Marshall this summer and the Euros coming up? Because got Scotland with his penalty heroics to the Euros, but has since lost his place as number one.
I don't think it means a lot for Scotland. I mean, you could look at Wales as well, when you've got Hennessy and Ward that are seemingly the one and two. Of course, Adam Davis has been playing a lot more regularly, so maybe he'll have half a chance for Wales now, maybe. But seemingly, it doesn't make too much of a difference. I still expect Wales to go with Hennessy, more than likely, despite the fact he's barely played this season. And Scotland, I fully expect to go with Marshall.
And just before we move on, I'd like to get your opinion on what happened at the end of the game. Now, you've been relegated, but you've not survived a relegation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what's your take on the celebrations that we saw from Derby? Naturally, you're going to celebrate the fact that you stayed up, but there were some who were suggesting they should have maybe underplayed it slightly more, especially considering their horrendous run in recent times. Like, it's not anything to celebrate, but a lot of the players knee sliding and jumping up and down, when really, should you maybe just go, do you know what? I was listening to Curtis Davies after the game. He was on Radio 5 Live and he said, yeah, I went up to a few of the Sheffield Wednesday players and consoled them, but it's not anything at all that I wanted to celebrate.
Yeah, look, it's perspective again. I think that if it's Wickham that did that, we'd have been going crazy for them. I think it's just the fact that Derby's such a big club, the expectation being so much more than staying up by the skin of your teeth. I get it. But then look, from an individual point of view, and I've been there as well, that for some of those players, had they have conceded that goal and gone down to League One, that might have meant their salaries being cut in half. It might have meant that they never get to play Championship football again. You know, effectively their careers could start to dwindle away to an extent. Like, all these things do run through your mind. And that might now happen to some of these Sheffield Wednesday players. You know, I think you always kind of look at it a bit differently for the likes of a Rotherham, because they do yo-yo. They have done for so many seasons. Wouldn't surprise me to see Rotherham come up again next season. You know, they're such a well-run club, but they know what they are. They know what their budget is. They come up, they go down, they come up, they go down. You feel it would be a bit different if a Derby goes down. I worry now for Sheffield Wednesday. So I get the celebrations, because actually Derby as well, being the type of team they are, depending on where they are financially going into next season, they're the type of team that could be challenging next season, as bizarre as it is. Look at Barnsley this season. And by the way, Barnsley don't have a budget anywhere near what Derby will have next season. So that's where I think the celebrations come from, in that on a personal level, it will mean so much more to some of these players, and the excitement that actually next season, if they get things right, if Wayne Rooney gets things right, then there's no reason they're not up the other end.
Okay, now regarding the second goal scored by Derby, it was quite similar again for Cardiff's equaliser, which put Rotherham down. Now, Jamal Blackman got beaten, not by a rocket, nor by a shot directly in the corner from Marlon Pack. I'm not saying that every single goal has to be a rocket or in the corner, but this one, again, similar in his position to Kieran Westwood. Yes or no?
No, I think this one, I wouldn't say that Blackman has any real chance. And the reason being is that if you see, just as the ball's about to be struck, he's got two men in front of him, so he can't see the ball. And you've got a decision that you need to gamble, really. You need to look one way or the other. And in the end, he's looked to his left, expecting Marlon Pack to kind of whip it round to his left to the top corner. And the moment that he's taken that gamble to try and see the ball, and Marlon Pack decides to whip it the other side, you're screwed. There's nothing you can do at that point. Some might say, well, look, you just need to hold a true position and try and react to what happens. And had he had done that, he might have actually had half a chance. But personally, I think from experience, having been there, I'd always want to try and see the ball, at least see the ball, so that I could react to it. And in the end, the fact that he gambled the wrong way meant that he couldn't see it.
Okay, and that was pretty much that, really, from the Championship. Just a couple of other things to mention. Luke Southwood with a first English League appearance, played in Reading's draw with Huddersfield. And you called it last time out, didn't you, that Connell Truman would come in for the final game of Birmingham season. They shipped five last week when bringing in Luke Geacock. They shipped another five again. I mean, yeah. Tough times towards the end of the season for Birmingham.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting going into next season, because it was a tough afternoon, it's fair to say, for Connell Truman. And Birmingham certainly haven't finished the season overly well. I know they, I think they took out Harley Dean and obviously made a few changes, which arguably made the difference. And often you see it when a club knows they're safe, maybe they take their foot off the pedal a bit. And, you know, Lebo has certainly done a very good job there. But it'll be very, very interesting to see what they do for a number two goalkeeper next season, because he has now given both of them a chance. And look, I think they're two good goalkeepers, but it hasn't quite worked out for either. So does Lebo now look to either get them out on loan or move them on? Maybe more so with Geacock being so young, you know, only 19 years old, whether he will now get a loan, you would feel, into League One or League Two and go and get 50 games under his belt. For Truman, whether that's for him now to move on or whether he does become the number two. But it'll be, again, one of many, many decisions. I mean, I heard the other day, and I don't know if this is true, but I heard there's over 100 goalkeepers that are out of contract this summer. So from the Premier League, Championship, League One, League Two. It's courtesy of Adam Sells, actually. So I'll give Sellsy a little shout out here. Over 100 goalkeepers that are out of contract this summer. So I'm expecting it to be the Wild West out there.
Tough to make that call, though, right after one game. And is that how it goes? You play one game and then you go, oh, do you know what? It hasn't worked out. Because, yeah, okay, you ship five goals, but it's not all on you. And like you say, when you know that you are safe, like Birmingham do, it's very much a case of let's think about being on the beach rather than finishing off the season.
I think you're right. I think that it's incredibly harsh. I think that ordinarily you will have made your mind up based on what they do in training, what you see on a day-to-day basis. If they're playing reserve games, you get a feel for that. Then if they do get that game, you just hope it goes okay. It doesn't need to be one of those games where you're outstanding and making loads and loads of saves. You just want it to be a solid enough game, and then that will tick the box that the manager needs to see, and then you move on. I guess the fact they've conceded as many as they have will mean a bit of a question mark. The other thing that goes against them is the fact that Lebo has only just come in, so he won't necessarily have a track record of who they are, what they are. So does he make a snap judgment? Does he bring someone in that maybe he's more familiar with, or someone that he knows will be better suited in his mind for that role? Look, how often do we see it when a new manager comes in and there is a bit of a shake-up? So, look, I'm just hypothesising here. I don't really know what they're going to do. It may well be that they go Truman as a 2, Etheridge as a 1, and they loan out Gcock next season. That would make a lot of sense to me. But I just wonder, given the couple of games, it did feel like it was a bit of an audition looking from afar. And if it was, then I would be a little bit worried for the 2.
Good stuff. Before we move on to the EFL, we spoke about him at the top of the show. Ben Foster kept a clean sheet in the win over Swansea. Hadn't played since the start of the year. What next for him now? Because it looks like, doesn't it, that Dan Backman is going to be the number one moving forward for Watford.
It does. But then at the same time, you know, I touched on Ben at the start of the show and my thoughts on him as an individual. He always finds a way. And I know that he's, 38 years old now. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets in at some point next season and he stays in. You know, I still think that you look at Backman and Ben Foster side by side. Credit to Backman. I think he's done brilliantly well. Brilliantly, brilliantly well. And really is a top, top goalkeeper. Any goalkeeper to be in a side that have been as consistent as Watford have been over the past few months, keep the number of clean sheets and get promoted with the team. The mentality you need to have in order to do that, I cannot give him enough credit. But that all being said, Ben Foster has shown over years and years and years just how good he is. So the way that I see it playing out, I think that Daniel Backman should be given the first chance next season. I'm sure he will be. But of course, it is a different kettle of fish playing in the Premier League. And you just wonder if Watford don't get off to the best start, whether that's the first change they make. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I hope for Daniel Backman's sake that he does start well, because I think he has certainly earned an opportunity.
Okay, would you like to hear the best of the rest from the EFL?
Love to.
Good. Toby Savin in inspired form to keep Portsmouth at bay and out of the playoffs. 6 saves, man of the match, and plenty of plaudits on commentary. I'm just going to quickly read this out to you, though, because on Gillette Soccer Saturday or Sunday, it would have been, wouldn't it? Jeff Stelling on Toby Savin. He played in the 7-0 defeat to Peterborough. He played in the 5-1 defeat to AFC Wimbledon. He played in the 3-3 draws with Sunderland and Portsmouth before this game. But he actually looks assured. And he was doing this with Lee Hendry, who, by the way, is on the list for the goalkeeper hating brigade.
I mean, I put Lee Hendry in a completely different bracket, if I'm honest. But no, Toby Savin, I thought, was excellent. I thought the save full stretch to his right from distance, always tough. Bounce just in front, coming at pace. Good decision to tip round the post. Then he had another one, solid low save to his right, which he held, had to hold. If he doesn't, they would have scored the rebound. One-on-one save to his left, kind of a shot slash one-on-one that I thought, again, stood up well, made the save. And then there was a free kick that went his side, which, of course, I would expect him to save. But he did, and he did it very, very well. So I just think in a game of this magnitude, no doubt Pompey fans will be hating him. No doubt there'll be many a picture of Toby Savin up on Portsmouth dartboards in different pubs down there, I'm sure. But no, he was excellent. And I think had it not been for him, you just felt that if Portsmouth had have got the equaliser in this, they probably would have gone on and won it. They were much better second half than they were first half. But credit to Toby Savin.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a result of that victory for Accrington, Oxford took the 6th spot in League One and go into the playoffs. They were 13 points off it in December, so it's some achievement. And they were, I'm not going to say helped along the way, they were going to win the game anyway. But Dylan Barnes, in for Burton, not played EFL football in more than 2 years, spent part of this season on loan at Hibernian, in for his first Burton appearance, beaten by an Elliot Lee free kick.
Yeah, a frustrating one for him, because I think the fact that it's squeezed under the wall in the way that it has, but he does get a good hand to it. You know, he gets his feet across, he gets a good movement to his left, explodes down to his left, gets a good hand to it. And it's just one of those frustrating ones. I think it hits the post and goes in. And, you know, he's probably a couple of centimetres from it being a good save and tipping it around the post. But certainly one he'd be frustrated with, given that he hasn't had many chances. So, of course, when you do get that chance, as we've seen and touched on with so many of these goalkeepers that have been given chances last couple of games, you're always hopeful that they go well. But at the same time, not easy when you haven't played that much first-team football to step into an environment like that, especially against an Oxford team who, as you mentioned, unbelievable, really, where they've come from. You know, we'll touch on Jack Stevens. The fact that he came in around that time, and albeit Oxford did have a tough start to the season, but it did coincide with Jack coming in, a couple of other players coming back into the team, and they've been very, very good, and they've timed it absolutely perfectly to essentially enter the playoffs in the final day on the back of, I want to say, 4 wins in a row, is it? 5 and 6, something like that. You know, they're really in good form at the moment. Jack himself made a very good double save in this one when the score was, I think, 1 or 2 nil, which again could have been quite important. And credit to them, look, how often do you see it when you go into that final game, the pressure's on, you know you need to win, and how often the teams just don't win, don't turn up. But the fact they did turn up, 4-0 win, going into the playoffs, Blackpool versus Oxford, you've got two really informed teams, two really informed goalkeepers as well, which will be interesting for us to mention in the next podcast. But it looks like it's going to be a fascinating playoffs.
It does indeed. And three other goalkeepers worth mentioning right now. Two from one game involving Blackpool and Bristol Rovers. Jed Ward making his debut for Rovers at just 17. He joined the club as an 8-year-old. And Stuart Moore in the opposite goal making his Blackpool debut in a move, in a decision which has huge implications for the clean sheet club. We'll get onto that in a moment, but both with some very, very good saves.
Yeah, indeed. Really pleased for Stu Moore, someone I know from when he was that bit younger at Reading, brother of Simon Moore, of course, who was with me at Brentford. And Stu, I feel for him in that he's got so much ability. I had 1 or 2 moments go against him, in particular at Luton when he was younger, but delighted to see that he's had this opportunity. He played a few games for Wealdstone earlier this season from memory, but delighted he's got this opportunity and a couple of brilliant saves. So one with his feet in particular, how he's managed to get up and over the bar, I'll never know. And a very good save to his top right as well towards the end of this game. So credit to him. And that's good for Blackpool to know that they've got him backing up Maxwell just in case anything does happen to Maxwell in the playoffs.
And Jed Ward is the fourth goalkeeper utilised by Bristol Rovers this season, by the way. Name the other three.
Well, there's Yacola.
Correct.
Yeah. Stapischoff.
Correct.
Thank you. Go on, hit me. Who's the other one?
Joe Day.
Oh, of course he is. Yeah, I knew that. I did know that.
I know
we,
you did.
Can we edit this and make it sound like I knew?
But a good performance from him and a lovely story.
Yeah, very good. He looks young. And of course, he is young, but he looks young in the goal. But I thought his performance was very, very good. Good reaction save that he made in particular. And credit to him. Look, brilliant experience at his age to come in and get that game under his belt. And certainly one to keep an eye on next year.
And Will Blackmore coming on for the final 10 minutes to bag a debut for Peterborough too. So nice to see some of those younger goalkeepers getting a game. Just in League 2, Joe Cracknell for the first 3 goals for Harrogate in a 4-1 defeat to Cheltenham. Bit difficult to watch this.
Really scruffy goals. I mean, the first one, I'm sure he'll hold his hands up. It just squirmed through him. It's one where just slightly outside a line and he wasn't able to get his body behind it and it squirmed through his hands and gone in. I'm sure that he'll hold his hands up. But the next two weren't necessarily his fault, but just really, really scruffy goals. The kind of thing you'd expect to see Sunday League. So I felt a little bit sorry for Cracknell on those two. But certainly the first, I'm sure he will take the blame.
Leyton Orient going down at Salford, but Lawrence Figueroa with a third penalty save from the last 5 that he's faced, saving from George Boyd.
Brilliant this. Really, really good. Some games beforehand in that he's moving along the line, leaving quite a large space to his left. But again, at the point at which the penalty is taken, he is back central. So sharp to get to his left. And the agility he shows to get his left hand out and somehow claw it out was just very, very good. And I felt sorry for him because he actually got then done by a bobble soon after that. A shot from distance that ordinarily you'd save. And the Salford pitch isn't the best. Let's just say that.
And 2 funny bits to finish in League 2. Matt Jilks fuming at conceding against Crawley. They were 4-0 up, Bolton. They were guaranteed promotion to League 1. but they conceded right at the end of the game. And it's fair to say he was not happy about it.
No, and I love this. That's the winning mentality, that even though they're promoted, they're 4-0 up, loving life, and yet he's still screaming at his defence. But I think that, for me, sums up Matt Jilks this season, in that he came in, the club weren't in a particularly good position. Of course, things hadn't gone quite to plan for Billy Crellin, but he really has brought that mentality to the team. And I do think he's been a huge, huge part of the achievement they've made.
On the 6th of February, Bolton, they were in 19th spot.
Unbelievable.
Just incredible, isn't it? What a league League 2 can be. And finally, Tom King saved a Matt Rush penalty in Newport's draw. Crucial, well, it didn't turn out to be crucial, but it could have been a crucial penalty save. They drew with Southend, and Josh Labadie did not know what hit him. We did put a tweet out saying that Tom King doesn't know his own strength, because he did a brilliant chest pump with Josh Labadie, who then rolled around on the floor. And I've got to say, he limped off around 10 minutes later. Who knows? We cannot confirm nor deny whether it was something to do with this altercation.
I really hope it was. I mean, could you imagine that headline, that he misses out the playoffs because of a chest pump with Tom King? But he must have a steel plate in that chest, because it really was. He was pumped. And of course, it was a big save, important save. Credit to Tom King, coming back end of the season and really has done a job for Newport. But yeah, huge save. And you could just see how pumped up he was. And he certainly showed that in the chest pump of all chest pumps. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, it's that time. Well, normally I'll make a poor joke in regards to a club, a different club. But to be honest, this week, it's the final week. It's important. I don't want to make a joke, because it all comes down to this week. Who has won this? We start in the Premier League, and Vicente Guaita, first in five. Alisson, one less, first in four. Jordan Pickford, one more, two in four. Adam Davis, 15 in his last 27 for club and country. David Stockdale, a remarkable 8 in 17 for the relegated Wanderers. Ben Foster, back to back double figures for the campaign. Stuart Moore, first pro shutout since March 2019. Ben Amos, this cornflake boy is a pro GK who had to be big, and he was big. His biggest ever clean sheet campaign with 16 in totes. Jack Bonham finishing with 4 in 8. Alex Palmer not yet finished, with playoffs still to come, but still 5 in 8. Nick Zanev, 5 in 14 since stepping back in, but more importantly, just 3 defeats. Jay Lynch wrapping up a fifth of the season. Jack Stevens bounding into the playoffs with a dutiful dozen. Toby Savin using the force and signing off in style in true Jedi fashion. Callum Burton up, up and away with 8 to save the day. Paul Farman 6 in 9 for the peanut butter Sarnie stopper. Jack Rose 2 in 3. Carl Leatherin 3 in 4 and flying into the playoffs. Luke McGee 3 in 5 and also in the playoffs. Jamie Partington howling at the moon with a full pro debut shutout for the Wolves loanee. Jamie Cumming, sadly for Stevenage, he'll now be going, but not before he racked up 17 for a solid season. Joe Murphy, 5 in 7. Shamal George, 3 in 5 in his best career games return. Vaclav Kladky, check 1, check 2, hype it up inside the venue. 5 in 6 to see out a first season in English football, and a fitting end to this particular clean sheet club, because
yes, indeedy, because Richard Vaclav, or Vaslav, or Vaslav, maybe, Kladky, who knows? He has actually tweeted us a message, which is lovely to hear from Kladky.
Hopefully he doesn't mind us reading it out.
Hopefully
private,
he doesn't.
Private message that
private
he sent
message.
You.
Private message. Should we read it out?
Go on, I mean, look, we're all friends here.
Okay. Hello, guys. I've been quietly listening to you for the last couple of months and have to say you're doing a great job with your podcast. Not because I won your clean sheet club, but because I like your opinions and your point of view. Anyway, thank you. And by the way, your pronunciation of my name is so close.
Oof.
So we've invited him on, haven't we? Hopefully he can give us the correct pronunciation. But as you can tell from there, the fact that Freddie Woodman conceded, the fact that Josh Griffiths conceded, the fact that Blackpool played Stuart Moore and not Chris Maxwell. Means the clean sheet kept by Kladky in Salford's victory over Leyton Orient puts him to 22 for the campaign in 46 games. We have our clean sheet club winner. for 2020-21. Absolutely wonderful scenes, and congratulations to Hladky. What a season he's had.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Do you know what? And when he stepped in, I'd argue that not a lot in England knew loads about him, but certainly easily signing of the season in League Two. You know, when you look at all the stats, not just the clean sheets, but the XGA, and actually watching a lot of his footage, which I have done this season, really has a game that could take him up a couple more leagues, you would feel comfortably. No reason he can't be playing Championship, if not higher than that. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens this summer.
Good stuff. Nearly there to finish, Richard. Did you notice the musical reference in that one?
I saw the Check One, Check Two. I thought that was quite gone. Which other ones? I'm sure there's a few, but I just read. I am Ron Burgundy.
Ben Amos was a nice little one. The Cornflake Boy, who had to be big.
I don't know that one.
Give you a little something. Here we go. Anything?
Is this the Cornflake Boy?
No, this is a song called Professional Widow. It's going to come in a minute. Here we go.
I'm waiting. Oh, it's got to be big. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, very good.
Tori Amos, if you're asking.
Ah, that's the Amos.
There you go. Very good. There you go.
Very clever.
Okay, we are nearly done, Richard. We've got one more save to talk about. This was sent in to us by @GageyCam. And what a save this was. It was in Wrexham's victory over Yeovil. They were 3-0 up already, so it was pretty inconsequential. Sean Pearson was looking to bag his second of the game. And Adam Smith with an absolutely incredible save.
Very, very good. I wrote in my notes, the Matrix. That's what I've written. The Matrix, because I feel we've watched this in super slow-mo and he's in midair as it's headed, and how he's reacted and got his left hand to it, I will never know. I will never know. So that's what I've written, The Matrix.
The Matrix.
Yeah.
Brilliant. He's the one.
He is the one. This week, he's the one. In fact, no, Vaclav Hladky is the one this week, I think it's fair to say.
He is. And on that note, actually, we're going to finish with him, okay? Not you. So you can have another break.
Another break. Beautiful.
But Richard, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.